Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So stay tuned. This is Bill Hendrickson, your host of Time Out, looking out at a partly cloudy, partly sunny sky here in beautiful Carrboro, North Carolina. Our parking lot is kind of a mess. They're redoing it, and it's always nice to see improvements being made. But when people come in, like our guest today, I wasn't sure she was going to be able to find a place to park. But our guest today is Jennifer Fry. It's so great to see you again.
Good to be here.
How long has it been since I have talked with you?
It's been years.
I've seen you. I read your stuff all the time. I mean, I'm a regular viewer of the things that you publish from your organization, Democracy North Carolina. And you're a terrific outfit. We're going to talk all about that today. Democracy North Carolina, what it's doing in the state, and for our citizens. So, Jennifer, you've been there since you were a teenager almost.
I've been there 12 and a half years, so yeah, it's been a while.
So tell us your history, and then we'll get into the organization.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was born and raised here in North Carolina. My family's from Kannapolis, which is a small mill town north of Charlotte, and I grew up in that area. And came up here to Chapel Hill for school and finished school and had found this great internship called Democracy Summer, which was part of Democracy North Carolina, where I learned all about organizing and money politics and voting rights. And
boy,
it was such a great internship that I begged for a job afterwards and took them 3 years to give me one. But they hired me as an organizer in 2006. So I organized actually in southeastern North Carolina, Fayetteville, Wilmington, even up to New Bern. And then in late 2007, I applied for the associate director role there, and I was in that role for about 10 years, and just recently decided I wanted to change, and now I'm the training director at Democracy NC, which means that I do political education and skills-building workshops across the state.
So you have you've always been involved with states, because when you were on the show years ago, we had some interns with you.
We still have that program.
Students?
Yeah. And
is that under your aegis kind of thing?
No, there's another director of that program. And we have one intern who's in our office, but he was busy today. But it's our almost 20th year of the Democracy Summer Internship Program. So every year for about 9 weeks in the summer, we've got talented young people, 10 to 12 talented young people working with us across the state. They do full-time organizing work right alongside our full-time professional organizers.
And I noticed in your website you have these people throughout the state. They're on your staff, these
That's right.
regional people.
That's right. We have five regional organizers based in different communities in North Carolina, spanning from Asheville over to Fayetteville and Rocky Mount and Greenville. And those organizers are working in community on voting rights issues and other issues related to democracy.
So what do they actually do?
Yeah, a lot of different things day to day. They organize with community-based groups. A lot of what they do is end up talking about how voting and the political process impact issues like education or healthcare or local issues that people are concerned about. So we connect the dots between how voting and participating in the political process allows people to develop the power they need to make the change on the issues that are important to them.
So do they get in front of groups, school groups, civic groups and so forth, or knock on doors, or
they,
a little bit of everything?
Yeah, they speak to organizations. They run local coalitions of individuals and members of different organizations. They train people on how to do voter registration. They talk about how the elections process works. They help phone bank and canvas related to the issues that we work on. Sometimes they train other organizations on how to do those things. It's a variety of things our organizers do on a day-to-day basis.
But it's a great job for a young person or someone who wants to be in practicing what they learned in civics class in high school.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think a lot of those basic civic lessons aren't taught anymore. So one of the things
really?
That we spend a lot of time doing, even for adults, is reminding people how power works and which elected officials are in charge of which kinds of decisions. So we do a lot of basic civic education.
Wow, that's terrific. So, but Democracy NC has been around for, what, 30 years?
About 25 years, at least.
And was Bob Hall the original director and until he recently
retired? He wasn't the first director, but he's been on staff since the organization was founded. It grew out of a project of the Institute for Southern Studies, where Bob was the editor of Southern Exposure.
What's that now? Is that
it's still around. The Institute for Southern Studies was a research-based organization developed in the 70s by veterans of the civil rights movement, and their research focused on the political economy. So they looked at things like workers' rights and environmental rights and how things like money and politics impacted the ability of workers and voters and ordinary people to impact political decisions.
So, but your organization has, is it now promoting the things that it started out with, or is it grown, expanded?
At its core, Democracy NC has always been about voting rights. We focused more heavily when we were first incorporated as a nonprofit on money and politics, so campaign finance reform. We pushed for public financing of elections in North Carolina. We're focusing more on voting rights and the overall political process at this point in time, but we still do the research and advocacy and organizing, sort of our three-pronged strategy for making change in these issues.
Well, I guess you kind of have to elevate your activity if there's certain issues that seem to be dominant in the state. Is that kind
right.
of the way it is?
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, big money in politics is still a problem, and it's even more of a problem since the Citizens United decision of 2010 that allowed corporations and trade unions to spend unlimited amounts of money. Now we have dark money and a myriad of problems related to that. But in North Carolina, especially since 2013, we've been focusing a lot on protecting the right to vote. We had a period of time in North Carolina in the early 2000s through 2009, 2010, where we were making voting more accessible. We passed same-day registration and pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, right. expanded early voting, a lot of things that brought more people into the political process.
Which are now under attack.
Yeah, since 2013, those things have been under attack, and there have been attempts to roll back every one of those access reforms.
Okay, well, so you follow these issues and you promote these issues, and you're in the eyes of the public. How does all this work in the public events when you're in front of the General Assembly in Raleigh or doing these things with other leaders? How does that work?
Yeah, we don't actually do direct lobbying as an organization. We have in the past, but we don't currently. Our role is really to educate people who are interested in being engaged and active in the political process about the issues that we work on and helping them lobby their legislators. So helping people understand that it's important to have a relationship with all elected officials at all levels, and engaging people to show up, contact elected leaders, meet with them, email them, call them, be active and in their faces about the issues that you care about, especially when those issues are under attack or under threat.
What's the most effective way to approach a legislator?
It varies. It depends on the legislator. You know, a lot of times now, legislators get so many emails from people that a handwritten letter is unusual and unique. Phone calls, sometimes legislators are available to talk to constituents, sometimes they aren't. Legislative assistants or the staff members right. that the legislators have often end up talking to people about their concerns. We encourage people to show up at the General Assembly. You can never guarantee that you get to sit down and meet face-to-face with legislators. I think each legislator has a different approach for dealing with or meeting with constituents, and one of the important pieces about being an active participant in our democracy is getting to know your particular legislator and how they best communicate with constituents so that you can reach them when they're accessible.
Since you're Democracy North Carolina, are you encouraging us to deal with Washington people, federal legislators?
We encourage people to do that in general, but our specific work is focused on the state of North Carolina. So okay. we focus on North Carolina and, again, on voting rights and other issues related to participatory democracy. Our long-term vision for the state is that we have a democracy where the people who are most impacted by certain issues have the strongest voice in the decisions made about those issues. In the near term,
that's a very good, phrase.
Where people who are most impacted by certain issues have the strongest voice in decisions made about those issues. And in the near term for us, what that means is that we ought to have a voting and elections process that's fair, accessible, and secure. Mm-hmm. So we are against things like partisan and racial gerrymandering of voting maps. We are for expanding voter access and participation. We think democracy works best when it works for everyone, when everybody who's eligible to vote can successfully cast a ballot, when voting opportunities are ample for every county in the state, all 100 counties of the state. So we work to expand early voting. We think there should be plenty of sites and hours for people with different kinds of schedules to vote. We think that we need to move in the direction of things like automatic voter registration, where people don't have to think about registering to vote. They're just automatically registered when they're eligible. We want to make sure that people aren't removed from the voting rolls just because they haven't participated in a couple of elections. We want people to be able to vote without barriers, including strict photo identification requirements, which the legislature is now pushing in terms of something that's going to be on our ballot in November.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So now early voting, when I lived in Hillsboro, it was very convenient. I knew where was right downtown, and I could go there. Now I live in Durham, and it doesn't seem to be quite as convenient. There aren't as many places, I guess.
Well, Durham is bigger. Durham, as far as the counties in the state goes, typically does have pretty good early voting plans. Something that's important to note about early voting right now, one, we always encourage voters to show up at the meetings where the Board of Election is deciding what sites will be open for early voting, and ask for sites near you.
Us people to show up.
Yeah, if you feel, Bill, now that you live in Durham, like their nearest early voting site is not close enough to you, you can voice that with the Board of Elections. They're the ones who make decisions about where they have sites. But right now what's happening in North Carolina is that at the last minute, the 11th hour of the legislative session, the legislature passed a law, Senate Bill 325, that changed the way early voting works. So they mandated that if the county has any election site open during early voting besides the Board of Elections office, that those satellite sites have to be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. And at first, they took away the last Saturday of early voting. They moved the start time of early voting up to a Wednesday and cut it off on the Friday before the election. Subsequently, because they got a lot of pushback about taking away the most popular early voting day, that last Saturday by far is the most popular early voting day, they put it back. They passed another law that restored that Saturday just for 2018.
Oh, really? I knew they did that. So a lot of back office stuff happening toward the end of the session.
Yeah, and you know, it's confusing to the county boards of elections. Yeah. It's confused. They were not consulted about this law. They were not asked if this would be helpful. Many of them were already in the process of deciding their early voting plans for the general election. Now they're having to go back and comply with this law. The language in the law was confusing to many county boards. They weren't sure what it meant to say you have to be open 7 to 7 if all that applied to all the sites. So it's been somewhat chaotic for them, unfortunately. And when we trace back the debate and conversation about early voting since 2016, this really does appear like a partisan attempt to manipulate boards of elections so that they have less flexibility, and that will negatively impact voters who are more transient, voters for whom it's harder to get to early voting sites, because by mandating that sites have to be open for 12 hours a day, every day of the week, a lot of counties whose budgets were already decided for this are having to decide whether they can have as many sites as they did last time.
Who controls board? Who does board of? How do you get to become a board of election member? Is that just friendly people who happen to volunteer? Or?
Yeah, no, and that's a good question, and it's also something that the legislature has attempted to change. So the old structure of local county boards of elections, each political party chair would recommend people to serve on that board. And the way the law was prior to this year, or prior to 2017, there were three members on each county board of elections.
Uh-huh.
Two members of the party of the governor, and one member of the other party.
Okay.
So in 2016, when we had a Republican governor, every single county board of elections in North Carolina had two Republican members and one Democratic member.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, in 2016, Roy Cooper ran against Pat McCrory in that election and won. So we had a Democratic governor. That meant that the power at the local board level was supposed to shift from two Democrats and one Republican.
And these are really administrative jobs.
They're volunteer board members who make the decisions. Every county has full-time staff that runs the day-to-day of the elections.
Oh, okay.
But in 2017, the legislature decided they didn't like that process, so they changed the structure of the Board of Elections at the county and the state level. They moved to a system where there are now four board members at the county level, two Republicans and two Democrats.
Oh.
And they changed the state board.
So nobody has control, supposedly.
It's pretty easy to deadlock in votes along partisan lines. And now the state board of elections has a total of nine members, four Democrats, four Republicans, and one unaffiliated member. However, the legislature has put on the ballot this November a change to that structure as well. They are calling it a bipartisan elections and ethics board. What they're doing is taking away that ninth seat. They want to take away
the
unaffiliated
seat
and have just four Democrats and four Republicans.
They like deadlocks,
the state board.
I guess.
The ultimate aim is for them to have more control and power over who gets on the state and county elections boards. So if you look at the language of the law that they passed in 2017 and the details of the amendment that's going to be on the ballot in 2018, it is a clear and apparent power grab. They're trying to undermine the checks and balances and separation of powers that we have in North Carolina, and they're moving to consolidate political power with themselves. Because as part of that amendment, they are also wanting to give themselves control to appoint members of all kinds of boards and commissions in North Carolina.
Well, okay, that's in favor of the present Republican Party. Let's say the Republican Party gets voted out. So now they have the new law, which is probably be interpreted by the Democrats. So you're kind of back in the same old game, aren't you?
Well, the problem is that regardless of who is in power, what these amendments are doing is giving the legislature, the legislative branch, the lawmaking branch of government, more power. It's taking power away from the governor.
Yeah.
There are other amendments that take power to make decisions over judicial positions. They're consolidating power in one branch of government. And groups like Democracy North Carolina, which we are progressive, we are left-leaning, we think that's wrong. But the John Locke Foundation, which is on the right end of the political spectrum, also thinks that that's wrong.
Oh, really?
It's not prudent to give one branch of government excessive power. That's what undermines democracy for the long term, right? So these amendments are not smart. And unfortunately, the way they're going to be worded on the ballot sounds very benign, even good.
Well, is this a constitutional amendment?
Yes, there are going to
There's
be six
of them, aren't
constitutional
they?
Yeah. amendments on the ballot. And three of those deal with what we would call democracy-related issues. The first one is a voter restriction. They're putting on the ballot
I hope you folks are listening, because you're going to have to know these when you show up at the election booth.
Yeah, and you know, everything that I'm talking about here, we are in the process of developing our voter education resources for the fall. If people go to our website, democracync.org, they can find the wording that's going to be on the ballot and then the details about what these amendments actually mean. Because if I were to read the wording of each of these amendments to you, you might say, oh, that actually sounds really good. But the devil is in the details.
Yeah.
Many of these are a Trojan horse that look good on the outside, but when you open it up, there's danger and destruction for democracy. Yeah. So there's the voter restriction amendment. There's a court packing amendment on the ballot. And there's a legislative power grab, which is what I was just talking about.
Yeah.
In addition to that, there are other amendments related to taxes, related to hunting and fishing, and related to something that they're calling victims' rights. It's really important that when people prepare to vote this fall, they not only research what candidates are going to be on the ballot, but they also look for these amendments and educate
and
themselves
about what
they mean.
You have to do this before you show up.
You have to do it well before you show up.
Because when you get to the voting booth and you have to read all this stuff, you just don't do it.
Right, and you won't know.
Right.
So let me give you an example, because what voters see on the ballot is not the full story. So I'm going to read to you the language of one of the amendments. A constitutional amendment to implement a nonpartisan, merit-based system that relies on professional qualifications instead of political influence when nominating judges and justices to be selected to fill vacancies that occur between judicial elections.
Okay.
What does that mean to you?
That means that that somebody else is going to nominate judges. They're going to change the rules.
Right. What this doesn't say is currently the governor has the power to fill judicial vacancies.
Right.
This will give the legislature
that power. And it doesn't say it that way, though.
Correct.
Read that again.
It just says constitutional amendment to implement a nonpartisan merit-based system that relies on professional qualifications instead of political influence when nominating justices
but
to fill
where
vacancies.
Does it give the legislator the power? Is it
in the bill?
It's oh, okay.
So there's a bill related to putting this amendment on the ballot.
This is making the bill constitutionally acceptable.
Right. This is the question as it appears to the voters.
Okay.
So
right.
many of these amendments lack detail. So what the legislators are asking voters is to hand them a blank check. You vote for this amendment, and then later on, we'll write the details. We'll work out the details.
Yeah.
Now, there's some detail in the full text of the bill about judicial vacancies, but that's not what you're going to see when you go in to vote.
So people are going to read what you just read, and they say, oh, that sounds okay. No.
Right. If people are not educated about the fact that these are really Trojan horse amendments and they don't look at the devil and the details, then they might be tempted to vote for them because the language sounds very benign or even good.
But what portion of the population are educated for these issues? I mean, really.
Right now, very few people, because these were passed at the last minute during a special.
Happened in the past. There have been all kinds of constitutional things. What's been the history of these? Do they normally get passed, or do people understand them enough and vote intelligently?
It varies by amendment, and you know, I think you can make an argument for how educated people are about these things. The bottom line is that this year, in a ballot that already includes a lot of judicial races because they cut out judicial primaries, varies from county to county, but everything from your member of Congress down to soil and water commissioner will also include these six amendments. And there's a lot of drop off when people go to vote. Typically, not everybody gets to the end of the ballot. And part of the reason is people don't understand or realize that these things will be on the ballot, and they get there, and in fairness to many voters, they think to themselves, I don't know what this means, so I better not vote one way or another.
Is there a big drop-off between voting for people and voting for issues?
There is a drop-off, even between voting for better-known offices like Congress and judges. District and Superior Court judges.
Yeah.
We can track that drop-off. I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but it's relatively significant.
Wow.
So at the end of the day, the danger is that you've got a very small portion of the population changing our Constitution.
Yeah.
Our Constitution is a document that is meant to protect our democracy, and it should be used to extend rights, right? To correct wrongs and extend rights. But these amendments, unfortunately, are using it for the opposite reason. They're using the Constitution in this case to restrict the power of the people. Right? Our Constitution guarantees and demands that all political power is derived from the people. But the legislators are asking voters to give up their power and give them more power to control our elections, to pick our judges, and to make decisions that ultimately legislators in the future need to be able to make. But by enshrining them in the Constitution, they're making that very difficult.
you're listening to a conversation. It's not quite a monologue, but she certainly has telling us a lot of information. This conversation is with Jennifer Frye, the director of training of Democracy North Carolina, which is an organization that you're going to hear a lot from between now and Election Day. And I'm glad we had a chance to have Jennifer with us today. There's more things to talk about, and I want to make sure we cover everything. So what are you guys going to be doing between now and Election Day? How will I know as a dumb citizen that I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, we are.
Well, I get your stuff, but I'm not, let's say I don't.
Okay. We produce a lot of voter education material. We try to speak in front of as many groups as we can. We will be hoping that newspapers and other news sources for voters talk about these amendments. They already are. A lot of editorial boards have come out against many of these amendments.
Are you pretty much tuned? Are the papers pretty much tuned into your message?
Well, they have their own message.
But
you know, I think that what I can say is there seems to be a lot of agreement. For instance, past governors, Republican and Democratic, have come out against these power-grabbing amendments.
That, right.
Mm-hmm. Right? So you've probably read this in the paper saying this is a terrible idea to change our Constitution in this way. So people can read that in the paper, hopefully on radio shows like this, as well as NPR and other programs. People can hear about these amendments. We're a small organization, Bill. We have maybe 18 people on our staff, but we're going to do our best to educate people that these things are going to be on the ballot and talk about here's what you're going to see and what it says, but here's what it really means.
Well, you're the most vocal and well-organized and well-presented organization of this type in North Carolina, but do you have any allies who are working with you?
Yes, there are other organizations that have looked at these amendments and have a lot of concern. The ACLU is one of them.
Okay.
The NAACP is one of them. We will be talking with Common Cause North Carolina, has been very outspoken about against the legislature's attempts to gerrymander our political districts. They also focus on other good government issues. There are a range of very local organizations that are tuned into these things in different communities. We are in process of talking with them and trying to understand what they see in these amendments and whether they'll be out talking, speaking against them. This might be a little too much information, but the reality is that nonprofit organizations, we can take a stance on a ballot amendment issue.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are constrained by nonprofit law. We can only use so much of our budget to lobby against things like this. Yeah.
Okay.
So we really do rely on people like you, voters who have neighbors and members of a congregation you might attend or organizations you are part of to talk to your friends, neighbors, family. It's really going to be voters reaching other voters that makes the difference on this.
What about some of the organizations that tend to be on the other side of the aisle, like the John Locke Foundation and a couple others of these foundations? Are they taking a strong position in favor of passing these amendments, or are they quiet about it? Or can you convince them to be a little bit more on your side of the fence?
I'm not sure about all of the organizations, but I can tell you that I read in a newspaper, an online newspaper, I don't remember which one it was now, that the John Locke Foundation was saying we should not be changing our Constitution to disrupt the balance of power and the checks and balances that we have. So, you know, I think voters need to be looking at different organizations to see what their perspectives are. But the best thing you can actually do is look at the language that's going to be on the ballot. Soon we should be able to see our sample ballots and look and see everything that's going to be on the ballot. And then find those news sources or other sources that can help break down, Democracy North Carolina is one of them, what these actually mean.
Well, this will be a great time. My wife is very good about this. When we get the sample ballots, she studies them very carefully, and she's a good example of what we all should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm glad you're talking about that. I just want to tell our listeners that you're listening to WCOM. This is your voice in the community. WCOM is supported by people in the community, people from Carrboro, from Chapel Hill, from other parts of North Carolina, and from elsewhere. We'll tell you later on in the show about some specific people who support this particular show. But if you would like to support WCOM, and we need your support or the lights will go off here, you can come to our studio. It's in Carrboro, 300 East Main Street. We are attached to the front of the very famous Art Center. You can leave a check in an envelope under the door, and you'll get full credit for that. Or you can go to our website, WCOMFM.org, and make a safe and secure donation. Or even this Saturday, there is a fundraiser in the Timberline Shopping Center in Chapel Hill at a little chocolate shop where free wine will be available from 2 to 6 in the afternoon. This is this coming Saturday, and it's a small fundraiser for WCOM. So I hope that you all will show up and get your free wine and drop a few dollars in the box. I'm not sure what vehicle it will be to make your contribution, but contributions are always accepted, whether they're in cash, change, or whatever. Anyway, back to you, Jennifer. What about these public events and hopping around in front of the legislature and stamping your feet and having the head of the NAACP.
Reverend Barber.
He is so dynamic. And he kind of likes, he's like your front piece, isn't he?
Well, he doesn't work for Democracy North Carolina. Democracy North Carolina was one of many groups that was part of the Moral Monday movement. There was a coalition of organizations that formed several years ago now to hold our elected officials accountable. Uh-huh. And they weren't hearing us one-on-one. They weren't hearing us through the normal process where constituents contact legislators and express their opinion, and there's a dialogue back and forth. So we had to resort to public demonstration and civil disobedience because the issues like healthcare and public education that are near and dear to most North Carolinians, the legislators were making the wrong choices on many of those issues, and we wanted to be heard. Voting rights would be in that list. You know, we have a legislature that has dramatically gerrymandered congressional and legislative districts. They have passed the worst voter restrictions in the country in 2013. They failed to enforce the National Voter Registration Act, which helps people register to vote at public service agencies. They accused innocent voters of voter fraud after the 2016 election. They changed the structure of our election administration in North Carolina. They took away health care in the form of Medicaid from hundreds Right. of thousands of North Carolinians. They changed the tax structure and got rid of earned income tax credit and other things that helped low-income North Carolinians, and they gave tax breaks to the wealthiest North Carolinians. There's a very long list of things that people in North Carolina who are working class, who are average North Carolinians, who support public education, we've been offended. We've been frustrated with the decisions our elected leaders have made and felt like they haven't listened to us. So part of being in the streets and part of being in front of the legislature is trying to get our message out and say, we want to hold you accountable. We don't stand with you on these issues. And Democracy North Carolina led different events related to the attempts to gerrymander legislative districts and judicial districts. At one point, our legislators were talking about taking away our right to vote for judges altogether. And we put pressure on them. We showed up. Mm-hmm. We brought hundreds of people. We had events across the state where hundreds of people showed up, and they backed down. They backed down from...
It works, is what you're saying.
It can work, yeah. And we have to be vigilant. So they backed down from moving from where we elect our judges as voters to appointing the judges through some merit-based process. But now we have this amendment that's going to be on the ballot that is sort of a backdoor and a slippery slope to leading to them taking away judicial elections in the first place. So again, that's why I'm saying we need to understand the details of these amendments. The one that's supposedly about a merit-based system for filling judicial vacancies also leads to a slippery slope where legislators can be the ones to appoint judges. It can also allow them to pack the courts. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to after they didn't like the outcome of the state Supreme Court election in 2016. They wanted to add two seats to the Supreme Court and fill those with people of their choice. They can use this amendment to do that. That's the blank check thing I'm telling you about, is that we don't know the details of what we are signing on to as voters, but we know the track record of the legislature.
Well, of course, when the legislature changed from many years of being a Democrat leadership, nobody knew what was going to be presented. There was these issues were not that part of a candidate's point of view when they were running because they didn't have the issues. They were just running against somebody. And fortunately for the Republicans, they outscored the Democrats. So all of the issues you're talking about came as the new legislators took office and started to think that they want to draft something up that you're talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, so there's political philosophy obviously involved here, and there's political maneuvering, and both parties are guilty of political maneuvering at the expense of us, the voters, the people, at the expense of our democracy overall, right? We can say definitively that the gerrymandering done in 2011, the last census was done in 2010, that meant that in 2010, across the country, there were legislatures that flipped from Democrat to Republican, and the Republicans and the conservatives have been very outspoken about their national strategy. They put a lot of money into state legislative races in 2010 because they knew that was an important year, right? They knew redistricting was coming in 2011, and they wanted to have majorities in state legislatures to be able to draw the voting maps.
And they do have a lot of state legislators, don't they?
They had a very effective strategy. Yeah. In North Carolina, the national committee that was in charge of this strategy to elect Republicans to do redistricting teamed up with Art Pope, a very well-known political donor in North Carolina, and they targeted dozens of legislative races in the state, and they won them. And that gave not only Republicans control of the House and the Senate, but also control of drawing the political maps. And they gerrymandered them so heavily that we ended up with a 10-3 split Republicans and Democrats in Congress. And those maps were challenged. The congressional maps were overturned for being gerrymandered along lines of race. Then they drew new maps. Those maps were challenged because they blatantly said, well, we're not using race, but we're doing this for partisan gain. Unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court has decided not to rule on partisan gerrymandering cases here and in Wisconsin. But that means it's up to us to go back to why we are in the streets, why we demonstrate in front of the legislature. When the normal channels of communication between constituents and elected officials don't work, we have to use other strategies to push for the things that we know are right. And across the board, across the political spectrum, the vast majority of North Carolinians agree that it is wrong for politicians to choose voters. That's not the way it's supposed to work. We're supposed to pick them, not the other way around. And gerrymandering, the way that they're doing these voting maps, it means that they're picking voters instead of voters picking them. So we have to come together and agree, okay, let's take the power away from the legislators. They shouldn't be the ones drawing these lines. We need an independent process for drawing political maps. That's just one example of the kind of issue that we're working on and that other groups are working on in North Carolina to say this is not actually partisan, right? What we are fighting for is the heart of our democracy. It's the ability of the people to stay in control of the institutions that are supposed to represent us. And we're unfortunately moving in a direction where power is being consolidated more and more with smaller and smaller groups of elected officials. And that is bad for our democracy. That takes us down a road that we do not want to go down.
Well, you know where the legislators are coming from that support these issues that you're opposing. What are you doing or what can you do in these maybe more rural areas to make some changes, to get some candidates running that you think can help change the change the pattern?
We don't do that work. We're a nonpartisan
organization.
I know,
but you have influence.
Well, No, we're strictly nonpartisan, Bill. We focus on the issues themselves. So what we can do is educate voters. I can have conversations like I'm having with you at doors on people's houses in those areas and say, and we've done this, and other groups have done this, knocked on doors. And
what your local people are doing, your people
in our organizers and the groups that we work with, knocking on doors in local communities to say, have you heard of this thing called gerrymandering? Do you think it's right for politicians to decide our voting maps, or do you think that should be done by an independent process? And overwhelmingly, people say, yeah, I think it should be independent. Both parties have manipulated the process, and I don't like that. We hear that over and over again.
So you're talking to people about issues.
Yes.
And you're not opposing people.
Right. We don't support or oppose people or political parties.
Okay.
We focus on the issues and try to give the voters the information they need to make choices on their own about who they support. But we want to encourage them to really look into what people support and don't support, right? So you have to dig to understand a position of someone who's out there talking about somebody who's running for your vote, right? You want to ask them the hard questions about what they really mean and what they really stand for.
Well, do your organizers consciously know how to get that message across in certain areas within their district where they know that the legislator that's in power now is in opposition to you folks? Do your organizers plan their message to get your message across, not against a legislator, but to translate the message so that it will obviously be against the legislator?
We work in areas where voters and communities have historically been underrepresented or locked out of the political process.
All right.
And we work with so people who have been traditionally locked out of the political process include voters of color, women, and young people.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with those constituencies, and we work with white people who believe in racial justice and who understand that we live in a country that suffers from the legacy of Jim Crow and structural racism that was baked into our system from the beginning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we move from our values and we move from our vision, and we go to places where there are people asking to be organized and ready to be organized because they care about issues and they want to understand how to use the political process to work on those issues. We don't calculate who's where. We want to know who the legislators are in areas so we can communicate that information to people. But our nonpartisan means that we're focusing on issues that are important to people and helping them understand how to navigate the process to work on those issues.
Well, I looked at your website and went down to your staff. It's a pretty effective staff. It sounds like people are quite professional in what they do. So now you're director of training.
That's right.
And who are you training?
I'm training our supporter base, our constituents. I train people from community organizations. As an example, in a couple of weeks, I will be talking to a group of middle and high school students who are part of an organization called North Carolina Asian Americans Together. They want to talk about what's on the ballot, and they want these young people from an early age to understand the importance of voting. I will also be speaking in September to a group of people here in Chapel Hill who want to know what's on the ballot in November and understand the offices and the amendments on the ballot so that they can educate their friends and neighbors. So
do you also work with your organizers and help them in their message?
Yes. So I help them develop and design trainings for their best volunteers or any volunteers that they want to work with. Things like, how do you run a phone bank to help people make a voting plan?
Mm-hmm.
How do you help people talk about complicated amendments, right? How do you break things down in a way that it's easy to have a conversation with someone? So we'll be doing that kind of work in the summer and fall leading up to the election.
Do you work with I'm a senior, and I don't live in a senior housing, but I know a lot of people that do. Do you work with these senior citizens to help them get there to vote? I mean,
We have, and we will. We don't have an ongoing program for that. We do have an ongoing program called Nonprofit Voter Engagement, where we work with various nonprofit organizations that provide some sort of service to people to help them register, educate, and turn out voters.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what are the polls show? Do you keep track of the polling, or doesn't that affect you?
I mean, it's always good to understand what polls are saying about various issues, so we do look at that information.
Okay. Rocco just came in the office here into the studio, and Rocco is a former radio person, but he's also professionally an academic in the public school world. So, Rocco, do you have a question for our star, Jennifer?
I do, Bill. Jennifer, pleasure to meet you. And
likewise.
I'd like to ask you what we were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
and that is, can you explain to our listeners about this voter ID card, North Carolina voter ID card that is in the works possibly, and what's the story behind it? And what would one have to do to get a voter ID card?
And that's a big issue.
Yeah, really, so is. I want to be very clear with your listeners right now and say currently in North Carolina, voters do not have to show a photo identification when they show up to vote at the polls. That's very important. People do not need that right now. And the reason they don't need that right now is that in 2016, a federal court looked at the voter ID law North Carolina had and said, this surgical precision, this law targets African-American voters. And it wasn't just about photo ID, but also the fact that in 2013, our legislature got rid of same-day voter registration. It cut a full week off of early voting. It got rid of pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. It got rid of out-of-precinct voting, straight party ticket voting. It was a monstrous law. We call it the monster law because it was the worst voter suppression bill in the nation. It was passed in 2013. Voter ID was part of that bill, but it didn't go into effect in 2016. So we were immediately, the NAACP and other voting rights organizations sued the legislature for this bill, saying that it violated not only North Carolina's constitution, but also the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause and the Voting Rights Act, right? So there was litigation around this, which led to this decision in 2016 to say, this is unconstitutional. North Carolina's voter ID bill is struck down. So they struck it down. They gave us back same-day registration. They gave us back that week of early voting. This year, what I was talking about with Bill earlier is that in an attempt to revive what we call a dead law, the legislature has put on the ballot in November this constitutional amendment around photo ID. And I can read you what the language is for that amendment. Constitutional amendment to require voters to provide photo identification before voting in person. That's all it says. It doesn't say what kind of photo identification voters would be required to show. We know that last time there was research done by the legislative staff on what type of ID black voters were least likely to have, and that was the ID that was acceptable. So we don't know if real ID is going to be accepted. We don't know if student IDs.
Well, who makes that decision?
The legislators will make that decision.
But it's already on the Constitution. Okay, so the law will then have to be passed to support this amendment.
Right. So, like I said earlier, this amendment would be a blank check.
Yeah, okay.
We would hand
it
to the legislators and they would fill in the blank with whatever they wanted, right? Uh-huh. So we don't know if it would be military. Last time, student IDs didn't count. There were very few. There was a very small list of ID that counted as photo ID to vote.
Yeah.
The people who support this amendment and who supported the voter ID law in North Carolina like to say, it's common sense and everybody has an ID, but it's not true. It's not true. There are hundreds of thousands of people in this state who lack a photo ID. That sounds crazy, but it's true. And we also know, we have the hard evidence, because we had that one election cycle in 2016, the primary, where we had to show photo ID to vote.
Right.
There were 1,400 people in North Carolina that we know of, eligible voters, people who had voted before, showed up to the polls, and because they didn't have the right type of identification, they were denied their vote. And these were the people who took the time to fill out paperwork and go through the process of saying, I tried to vote and I couldn't. There are many more who just were turned away or walked away, who gave up, who found the process too complicated or time-consuming. So we were talking about, I can also tell you that in 2016, our State Board of Elections found one instance of the only kind of voting irregularity that photo ID addresses. The only thing that photo ID prevents is voter impersonation, where one voter pretends to be another voter. They found one instance of that in 2016. So we're comparing one to 1,400. How many eligible voters is it worth disenfranchising to prevent something that rarely happens? We have to make that choice as voter. Are we okay? There's no photo ID law. There's no photo ID law that doesn't prevent eligible people from casting a ballot. That's not okay. Democracy only works when it works for everybody.
Right.
Photo ID, we know because of our experience, because of the experience in other states, that it disenfranchises voters. And if we're talking extreme, only one state in our whole country has a voter ID amendment, a photo ID amendment, or in its constitution, has photo ID in its constitution. Mississippi.
Oh, really?
Which does not have the best history on voting rights. It has the worst history on voting rights in the country. So do we want to be on a list with Mississippi in terms of enshrining a voter restriction into our state constitution? I don't think we do. I don't think reasonable North Carolinians think that that's okay.
Well, how many,
got an answer, Rocco.
How many legislators do you think want to disenfranchise voters in this state?
It's a good question for your legislators.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Why would they even consider putting this in?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's the right question, is why do we need this? We know we have problems with our elections, but we also know that voting irregularities are pretty rare. When there are irregularities in voting, our own State Board of Elections, they've investigated this. They find that most instances of illegal votes are cast by people who don't understand the rules, or they happen because the people who work at the polls, who on election day are people like you and me, who decide, oh, I'm going to take the day off and do my civic duty and be a poll worker. If we're not properly trained, or if we don't understand the rules, we put ourselves in a position and put voters in a position of breaking rules that we didn't know we were breaking. We can fix that. We can fix that problem. We need more resources for local election boards to implement elections, and we need better training for poll workers. Another really big concern, which is valid, right? We don't want cheating in our elections process. We want elections that are free, fair, accessible, and secure, right? But we're not addressing the biggest threats to election integrity, which are things like malfunctioning voting equipment, cybersecurity, right? Yeah. People are talking about Russian hacking a lot these days. There are real issues we need to be looking into. Photo ID is actually a distraction from those issues. It's a distraction in terms of our attention span. It's a distraction in terms of our money, taxpayer money going to something that we know prevents eligible people from voting but doesn't stop election irregularities from happening. We need to be passing reforms in North Carolina that help people vote, that increase participation. We need to increase participation, not restrict it, and that's what this amendment will do.
Well, Jennifer, you're very eloquent and very convincing, and I hope we had a good audience out there today, and
thanks for your
question, Rocco. We have to sign off, unless you have a quick question.
The time always disappears.
It really does.
The next show will be The Bachelor Pad. L.A. Bachelor sometimes comes in and broadcasts live. Sometimes he broadcasts from elsewhere, because L.A. Bachelor shows are syndicated to where? New Hampshire, other parts of the country?
I believe it's on ESPN in New Hampshire and in Florida.
Okay. And I'd like to thank retired Ambassador Michael Cotter. He underwrites this show. Michael Cotter's been on the show 10 or 12, maybe 15 times, talking about international events, and there's plenty of them to talk about, and he'll probably be with us again probably in September. And I'd also like to thank Tim Hux. Tim and Bob Ward have been in the show talking sports, but Tim has a business called Rising Tide, which is Tim is a certified financial planner, and he will help you invest your money and hopefully will rise high with the tide. And I'd like to thank the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters. These are professionals who help you and your wife and your family and your husband and your children and your business work your way through the problems of health insurance, which are kind of complicated and getting more so. And one more underwriter of this show is MidCap Advisors. MidCap Advisors is a financial service company in New York City, specializing in mergers and acquisitions. And Rocco, you'll be doing your show again on Saturday?
I will. And Music Hall is a show about good music for a Saturday morning.
You
want
to listen to Hip Saturday? You can get our station on the go to the web, WCOM, and it says listen live, and you can hear us wherever you live. You live in?
I live in Durham.
You live in Durham?
Yeah. Can I make one ask before we sign off?
Okay.
I want to ask all the listeners to go to Democracy NC's website, democracync.org, and search voter pledge, and pledge to vote against these amendments this fall. Sign the pledge. Get your neighbors to sign the pledge. We need as many people as possible to know these amendments are on the ballot and vote against them.
And your organization is supported by people like us who send in checks.
Absolutely. You can also donate at our website, democracync.org.
And you have some institutional support, I believe, don't you?
We also get foundation funding, but we're trying to increase the amount of money we get from individuals so that we can continue to be as independent as possible.
Well, you're doing a great job, and I hope you stay there another 12 years.
Thank you.
That's it for today, folks, and tune in next week. I'll be talking by phone with Annette Bechtold of Atlanta. We're doing a national program sponsored by the International Association of Health Underwriters out of Washington, D.C. So it's going to be a live phone show. So something new we're doing here. That's it. Goodbye, and tune in again.